This is Upstate's HealthLink on air, Linda Cohen joining you. Well, those with type 1 diabetes often say that having the condition is like having a second job because of the stress of monitoring their blood sugar levels and administering the doses of insulin. But now there's a new breakthrough that may change all that. Here with more on this is Dr. Ruth Weinstock, Distinguished Service Professor, Medical Director of the Clinical Research Unit and of the Joslin Diabetes Center at Upstate, and Chief of the Division of Endocrinology, Diabetes, Metabolism in the Department of Medicine at Upstate as well. Welcome, Dr. Weinstock. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Let's begin by helping us understand type 1 diabetes. I mean, I know this is something that I think people sometimes get confused about. In this country, we have been hearing about the rise of diabetes, but quite often that's been referring to type 2 diabetes. So help us understand the distinction here.
So type 1 diabetes is also rising, unfortunately, both in this country and worldwide. It's one of the most common chronic diseases in childhood, but it can have its onset at any age in life, including in adulthood. And what happens with type 1 diabetes is that the person's own body starts destroying its own insulin-producing cells. That's called an autoimmune process. So sometimes it can happen very, very early in life, age 1, 2, or 3, or as I said, in adulthood. This is not associated with obesity or sedentary lifestyle as type 2 diabetes is. It has a different etiology. And when enough of the insulin-producing cells are destroyed, then one has to inject insulin for survival.
So is one of the distinctions part of the distinction between type 1 and type 2 is that type 1, you're totally insulin dependent. In other words, you have no more insulin producing cells.
Yes. Now, there are some patients with type 2 diabetes who are also extremely insulin deficient and need to inject insulin in a similar manner to those with type 1. So the real this distinction is the autoimmune process. And in fact, we are involved in nationwide research projects that looks at relatives of people with type 1. And we have found that those who have evidence of autoimmunity against the pancreas are at very high risk of developing this disease.
So do they have any clue at this stage as to what, you know, triggers this kind of an autoimmune response, either in an infant or as at later age?
So we're not sure. We know there's a genetic predisposition to autoimmunity. But then in terms of the triggering event, in some cases it might be a viral infection. In other cases, it could be an environmental toxin. But in most cases, we're not sure.
That's very interesting. So basically, we're not at the point now where we have causation. I mean, we understand the mechanism, but we don't know what actually gets it started.
Right, and there's a lot of research in that area because the goal is to prevent it.
So at this point, so given that idea, though, why is it increasing? Do we have any clue as to why type 1 would be increasing more worldwide?
So again, we're not sure why that may be. Again, whether it's involved to immunity, to infections, to the environment is not clear.
So there could be, again, this whole notion of environmental toxins mm-hmm. that could be playing a role. So what kind of challenges do people with type 1 diabetes face?
So people with type 1 diabetes need to inject insulin multiple times a day, typically at least 4 times a day, or use an insulin pump and monitor their blood sugars. As the disease continues on in years, particularly after one has had type 1 diabetes for over 20 years, there are new challenges. Hypoglycemia, the blood sugar going too low, becomes more of a problem. People lose their ability to feel their blood sugar going too low. And that is a dangerous situation because hypoglycemia, if left untreated, can cause a seizure or loss of consciousness or confusion. So it's actually extremely difficult to keep your blood sugars exactly in range, if not impossible, for someone with type 1 diabetes.
And you were mentioning that somebody might need to, for example, on an average day, be checking their blood sugars at least 4 times a day, sometimes
yep,
more.
Yeah, and we have patients who check more often. Now, fortunately, in recent years, there has been some new technology called continuous glucose monitoring systems. These are systems that one can wear. A tiny little needle or catheter goes just under the skin, just as deep as an insulin injection, so it's not very deep. and it monitors the sugar levels or glucose levels in the fluids that bathe your tissue every few minutes. And you can look at those levels on a display, and you can see if your blood sugars are going up or going down. And most importantly, you can set an alarm. So if the blood sugar goes too low, it will alarm, or if it goes too high, it'll alarm. And so that has helped people who no longer can feel the symptoms of a blood sugar going too high or too low.
That seems like that's a major breakthrough.
It is a major breakthrough because type 1 diabetes is extremely difficult to control. Many things affect your blood sugar, not just what you eat, but your stress level, your activity level.
So it's always all over the place.
So for some people, it's just extremely difficult with wide fluctuations.
So there, I mean, I've heard for years of this notion of the insulin pump, which at one point was thought to be quite a major breakthrough. Tell us about that, and how does that intersect with those?
So insulin pumps have been available now for over 20 years, and majority of our patients with type 1 diabetes do use insulin pumps. They are insulin delivery systems in which the insulin is infused, again, just under the skin in the what we call subcutaneous tissue, in the fat tissue, same place where you would give an insulin injection. And it gives a tiny amount of insulin every few minutes, so with the idea of your blood sugar staying within range when you're not eating, and can give a bolus or larger dose of insulin when you're eating or to correct for a high blood sugar. But the patient is in charge of that. You know, we help with the settings, but it's the patient who controls that. It's a major breakthrough, and we were fortunate to be involved in some of these early clinical trials, is to have the continuous glucose monitoring systems, or the glucose sensors, actually communicate with the pump. So there is now a pump where the glucose levels or sugar levels from the sensor automatically go into the pump. And if the pump sees that the blood sugar is going below a dangerous level, it can shut off insulin infusion.
Wow.
And this has been a major breakthrough. This is now actually available and has decreased the time in hypoglycemia or low blood sugar for patients, particularly overnight, but also during the day. So that is the first mini step to the artificial pancreas.
And that's what I want to get to, which we will in a minute. But that seems like a major breakthrough, taking it off the patient's consciousness. I mean, the fact that they have to monitor and be hypervigilant basically 24/7.
Right. So, you know, you still need to monitor, but this is, again, the first step to what we mean by closing the loop, getting it out of your hands in terms of how much insulin you need.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with Dr. Ruth Weinstock, and we're talking about diabetes type 1, but we're also talking about this new breakthrough called the bionic pancreas. What is it?
So the bionic pancreas goes a lot further than what I just described. So that is basically an insulin pump that can infuse two hormones. One is insulin, which everyone with diabetes needs to keep their blood sugars normal. And the other is glucagon. Glucagon is a hormone that works opposite to insulin. It raises blood sugar levels. People with type 1 diabetes have glucagon at home to use in case of emergency if their blood sugar goes too low. The bionic pancreas is able to infuse insulin, as our current insulin pumps do, but also glucagon if the blood sugars go too low or are falling too quickly, particularly overnight or during exercise. So, and which is more physiological. It's more that what happens for people
more
who
natural.
Do not have diabetes. And it accepts blood glucose levels from continuous glucose monitoring systems. So it can do it all automatically. So the person with diabetes doesn't have to check their blood sugars up to 12 times a day and worry about these wide fluctuations.
So in fact, you're really, in a sense, providing them with a pancreas.
So that's the idea, an artificial pancreas.
It's not an organ. I mean, it's
right, and it's not
it's a device.
Quite as good as, you know, one's normal pancreas, but certainly it's a major step forward in terms of treatment.
And is this in the form? Tell us just physically, what does it look like? It's part of a smartphone that actually
right now you still need to wear an insulin pump and wear a sensor, which are both small devices. So far, it's only been used in a small, relatively small number of people for a relatively short period of time.
So it's in trial.
So it's definitely in trial. The blood sugars aren't perfect. They're not as good as someone without diabetes. But what it's shown is it can do better than most people can do without it. So it's not a cure, but it would definitely be a major step forward. And so a lot of research is going on now by a number of groups to perfect the continuous glucose monitoring systems to make sure they're as accurate as possible, and to perfect the pumps. And the other component that is needed is the glucagon. So right now, we've had stable insulin for a very long time that people can inject, but we haven't had a stable glucagon solution that can be used in a pump. And so that is something that a number of pharmaceutical companies are working on that will be needed in the artificial pancreas.
So what kind of research right now is, they're trialing this particular bionic pancreas, I understand, but what type of research are you engaged in currently right here at the Joslin Center? And how will these studies that you're involved with play a role in this larger picture?
So we are doing over 20 projects actually related to diabetes here, funded by the National Institutes of Health, Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation, as well as other sponsors, non-for-profit, as well as some pharma companies. We were involved in that original study, which had the first pump that could shut off insulin in response to a low blood sugar, and we're continuing working on that project. We have a new project starting with a new continuous glucose monitoring system that we hope will be more accurate than the current ones. We have a study going on for people with type 1 diabetes that is looking to preserve kidney function in those in whom the kidneys are already affected by the diabetes, which is a very exciting project sponsored by National Institutes of Health, as well as some new pharmaceuticals, new insulins, and other approaches for diabetes. We're also very interested and have a number of studies looking at how to prevent hypoglycemia or blood sugars that are too low, which are so dangerous, particularly as people get older with type 1 diabetes.
So basically, are you looking for patients at this point to participate in some of these research projects?
Yes, we always are looking for volunteers. The projects, as you can imagine, continue to evolve. We have new ones every few months. So anyone who is interested in learning more about our research, please give us a call at area code 315-464-9007.
And they can basically then potentially become a participant in one of these trials. So in the very little time we have left, the concept here is, it sounds like most of the research right now is focusing more on symptom control. But do you also envision some of the early, when we were talking about this idea of autoimmunity or what is actually behind the origin of diabetes, do you also see the potential for there being breakthroughs in that arena as well?
Absolutely. And actually, we're involved in a multi-center trial with the National Institutes of Health for prevent type 1 diabetes. So this is a project where we screen relatives, and if they have evidence in their blood that they are at high risk for developing type 1 diabetes, evidence of autoimmunity, certain antibodies, high titers of certain antibodies, there are some clinical trials now to try to prevent the pancreatic destruction.
Wow.
So that's very exciting as well. I mean, we hope someday there could be a vaccine for type 1 diabetes.
Wow. Wouldn't that be amazing? Well, thank you so much. It's always so inspiring to talk to you and to listen to all the exciting things that you've been involved with. My guest has been Dr. Ruth Weinstock, Distinguished Service Professor, Medical Director of the Clinical Research Unit and of the Joslin Diabetes Center at Upstate, and Chief of the Division of Endocrinology, Diabetes, and Metabolism for the Department of Medicine at Upstate Medical University. Thanks again for coming in.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.